Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
I can never remember anyone's name in this except for Laser Wolf, because whenever they say Laser Wolf, I picture a wolf that shoots lasers out of its
exactly.
eyes.
Exactly. And why wouldn't he?
I think the musical would be improved 100-fold if Tevye was trying to betroth his daughter to a wolf with lasers.
A wolf with lasers, who is also a butcher.
And then the daughter was like, but I don't want to. And Tevye was like, but he's a butcher. I'm like, but he's a wolf, Papa. And then the wolf runs around and goes, ah, ah, ah.
That's a great wolf impression, wasn't it?
I hope you're listening, Revival. I do, before we start, Jimmy, we got feedback.
We got lots of feedback this time, which is good.
We got, hold on, I want to pull it up, because there was one thing. I made a mistake, maybe.
What did you do?
I know. In our last podcast, when we were talking about the 2005 revival of Sweeney Todd.
Yes.
And we're talking about all of them playing their instruments, and I made some comment about how, even if you think they sound reduced on the studio recording,
yeah,
that is even studio musicians playing there. And I think I got that wrong.
So it was the actual Electro Musos that were playing?
Well, I haven't been able to find any confirmation either way.
Either way. Okay.
Which would lead me to believe it is the actors playing.
Yep.
If it was studio musicians, they would have been credited on the back of the CD, which is something I checked.
Exactly, that's true.
I tweeted about this, and I still can't find it for the life of me. I have a distinct memory of like a Broadway Bonnet parody concert. It's like... And if anyone on the internet has found this, please send it my way, because it's hilarious.
I could only imagine it would be from a bonnet. I can't think why else they would have done it.
It's something. In my mind, it's a little more professionally filmed than a bonnet, but I'm not sure. And the whole conceit of it, it's like Michael Severus and Patti LuPone, and they're all like doing the thing, complaining about how hard it is to play. And they get to the very end of it, and it's like the sorry. Oh, sorry. And like then the lights go wrong, and it's all about how they can't play the music. It's out there somewhere.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? So,
well, hopefully someone who's listening knows.
Hopefully Michael Severus is listening.
He's a big fan. But I was actually quite happy with a lot of the other feedback that we got. Please keep giving us it, because it helps.
If you have feedback about this episode, you should head over to jimandtomic.com and click through to the Reddit, where you too can discuss this podcast.
Lots going on there. We're very active.
We are very active.
And I have it on my phone, which is something I swore never to do.
Oh no. Pooping will never be the same.
Yeah. It's changed my whole life. Everyone's favorite Jewish musical, Fiddler on the Roof.
See, and everything I read starts, you know, everyone's favorite Jewish musical. And while I don't debate that it is a musical okay. Yes, it is a Jewish musical.
Yep.
But just, that's like calling Hamilton a biography of Alexander Hamilton.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's what I said it was.
I guess that's true.
But no, obviously, yeah, that's on the surface, but we're going to dig.
We are. We're going to dig into that fiddler.
Get out your shovels.
That sounds kind of weird. Makes it sound real weird. So you've seen Fiddler.
I have seen Fiddler. Have you seen Fiddler?
I have seen one production of Fiddler on the Roof. I went back and looked, performed by a Catholic school.
Well, there you go. That's really interesting. Yeah, my university did it, and a lot of my friends were involved, and it was very good.
I always wonder this. Did anyone have Scottish or English accents in it?
Great question. I don't think so. Do you know, this is an interesting thing about theatre in Scotland and the UK. The fact that we grew up on American TV. Actually, everyone's quite good at doing American accents, comparatively to your guys' efforts at Scottish accents. I'm sure someone will tell me I'm completely wrong, and please do, because it's feedback. but I think Scottish people in general are just better at doing accents, because no one speaks Scottish on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, every now and then you'll get one person, But for the most part, everyone's speaking a different accent, and kind of our generation who's grown up on TV and YouTube and things like that. I think we just, it's a synthesis thing and osmosis.
And so would people, I guess what I'm getting at and what I'm wondering is, because Fiddler on the Roof is, as you said, everyone's favorite Jewish musical, but not everyone in it is Jewish. And that I came across a couple articles, a couple reviews that were critical of people playing Tevye, people playing various people and not being Jewish. And that's an interesting perspective to me.
It is. It is. Because it's really, it's at the heart, especially Tevye, it's at the, well, no, everyone, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's at the heart of it. I don't know, I guess. Is it just, do you need to be Jewish? Do you just need to really be devout in faith to understand, you know, what's going on in their head?
Right. The counter argument is that, you know, Andrew Rannells isn't Mormon. And as we've expounded upon far too much, as Hamilton has proved, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. But a lot of people have a lot to say about that in Fiddler on the Roof, and it was not something I was expecting to come across.
No. Well, okay, so let's take a look at the revival. I'm going to jump straight in.
Excellent.
So
let's do it.
The previews start today, obviously not today when you're listening.
This is the Broadway revival we're talking.
This is the 2015 Broadway revival. Kind of looking through the cast, a lot of them, I'd say maybe the majority, are Jewish. In kind of their segments and interviews and things from workshops, they talk a lot about kind of what it means to them to be able to perform this musical. And I love that. I think that's amazing. And that's obviously one of the reasons why Fiddler is so huge and well known, is because it really just provided an amazing voice for a community that isn't necessarily featured as, I don't know, as I want to say, like, literally.
It embodies a set of traditions and a time in history and a feeling in history that I think is not represented in other art forms, and one that is absolutely worth remembering as showcased in Fiddler's success.
I'm also really panicking that I'm going to offend a lot of people.
Yes, and I think it is important to try not to offend people on the internet, and also important to remember that people on the internet are easily offended by things you never expect.
Exactly.
And so, sorry to those of you we accidentally...
For example, Helena Bonham Carter fan.
I'm sorry, helenabonhamcarter.tumblr.com is god.com/we love Helena Bonham Carter fans.
There you go. Zing. Anyway.
We were talking about the revival.
We're talking about the revival, and we're talking about the cast. Danny Burstein, Jessica Heck, Adam Cantor. I can't remember the one playing Zytel, but I think she's also Jewish. A lot of them speak about how, when they were younger, it was such a huge part of their lives, you know? And it's so nice, obviously, for them to be able to, I guess, give something back. Because it's a show that really does mean a lot to a lot of people. But I think, interestingly, it kind of resonates with me. I'm not Jewish in any way.
No, it's a show that means a lot to me, too, and I'm not Jewish either.
Yeah, is it the reverence of it? I don't know. There's something about it which just makes me think, I find it really emotional.
With Fiddler on the Roof, as much as it is a musical about Jewish tradition and Jewish life, it's a musical about changing Jewish tradition and changing Jewish life. And that, I think, speaks to a lot of people on a lot of different levels, because whether or not you identify with the particularities of it, you can absolutely identify with the, here's the way I thought my life was, and now slowly, but bit by bit, everything I knew was right is now changing.
That's almost the take-home message, isn't it? It isn't just, yay, Judaism, it's look at how you can be affected by these issues.
It feels like a story of perseverance, which is never a word I would have previously even thought to associate with it, but the more I think about it, it's true.
Should we chat briefly about what it is for people who haven't come across it? Do you think a lot of people will
not listen to Fiddler on the Roof? Well, so we should talk about what Fiddler on the Roof is, and then I want to talk about why I think it would be impossible to find someone who hasn't seen Fiddler on the Roof.
I mean, I do know some people that have not seen it.
That's crazy. So we should talk about that. But Fiddler on the Roof, for those who don't know, is about Tevye the
Milkman.
Yeah. In the town of Anatevka in...
like Eastern Europe.
Exactly. I bet you it's somewhere more specific. In Russia, in Anatevka, just around the turn of the last century.
It's literally, and it's funny that you've just done Ragtime as your show of the week, but it's the prequel.
It is the prequel to Ragtime, yeah.
And in many ways, it is, which I think is it's almost quite interesting to watch them as like back-to-back almost, that you can imagine that Tata from Ragtime has come from Anatevka and...
is Tevye from Fiddler. So Tevye the Milkman has five daughters.
He has five altogether, yeah.
Three of which are...
are of marriageable age.
Yeah. And the marrying tradition of the time is that your daughter is basically given away or set up with her future husband, her fiancé, her husband-to-be. And because Tevye is a poor milkman, it is important that, to him at least, that his daughters marry rich or marry into success so that they can be prosperous. But of course, since times are changing, they want to marry into love, Jimmy. Love.
Which is beautiful, isn't it? That's a nice sentiment, marrying for love.
It is. And then hilarity ensues.
And then also complete tragedy ensues.
I think more tragedy ensues than hilarity, actually.
Yeah.
It is not a funny musical. It's funny in small parts.
Yeah, little pockets of fun.
But by and large, especially Act 2... is not funny.
That act too. I mean,
what a swing.
Don't want to give away spoilers, but that is not happy. And also, that's really good that it's not happy, because in the 60s, when this musical was first performed, people were used to happy endings.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I think it's really interesting. The writing in Fiddler, you can hear it right from the get-go, right from the overture. Obviously, it's really stylistic towards kind of the klezmer traditional Jewish music, but it rings of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Absolutely.
You just think, Golden Age, great, love it. And then it just takes a turn. It's like, this is fun, here's all these fun, happy songs, everyone's dancing, and zinc, sorry.
It is interesting to me because I don't think the specific ending of Fiddler on the Roof is terribly tragic. There is definitely a sparkle of hope.
Yeah. That's the thing, is you're not meant to think, right, off they go to die.
From what I've read, the stories that this musical is based on, mm-hmm. everyone except Tevye does die.
Really?
And so they absolutely made a decision to create a slightly more hopeful ending.
Holy moly.
Of the surviving daughters, Tevye and wife, not surviving daughters, unmarried daughters.
Yep.
Tevye and Golda to travel off to greener pastures, maybe.
Tells your thoughts about marriage, doesn't it?
We've talked about this before, but structure is one of the things I love about musical theater. And the first question with Fiddler on the Roof is, who is the protagonist? The easy answer is Tevye.
Yep.
I bet you that's the most successful answer. What holds me back from saying that 100%, usually in the structure of a piece of musical theater, the first song, or the first beat of a song at least, sometimes it's one or two songs, is exposition about the location and the place and like all the backstory setting stuff. And then usually the very next song is the character introduction song or I want song of the protagonist.
Yep.
But after tradition comes Matchmaker, Matchmaker. And then we get If I Were a Rich Man, Tevye's I Want song. So I think there would be an argument to be made that the protagonist is some kind of amalgamation of Tevye's daughters. The reason this is important, to me at least, is because Tevye does not get what he wants. The daughters do.
I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
I'm going to disagree because Chava, who I would argue doesn't really get what she wants.
Yeah.
Because, again, I don't want to spoil, but... oh, stuff it. I'm spoiling.
If you haven't listened to Fiddler, pause this, go listen to Fiddler.
Yeah, exactly. Chava doesn't get what she wants because, obviously, at the end, she's like begging her dad, please acknowledge this and give me your blessing. I know, do you think him saying God be with you is giving a blessing?
No, I think it is a musical of watching Tevye's, love is the wrong word, because he certainly doesn't love and adore all of the traditions he's stuck with, but watching his grasp on the traditions around him slowly erode.
Yeah.
And it's represented by how each of his marrying daughters pushes him that one step further.
Yeah.
And it is with Chava, I think, where he says, absolutely no more. This is where I draw the line. And if you don't have that, then a lot of the musical is for naught. Because part of the traditions that we're seeing go away is the tradition of the daughter listening to the father.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing that traditional family structure erode before our eyes.
In the musical, the stage production, how similar is that to the film?
I've never had the chance to see them close enough back to back to look at it in detail. But as far as I know, they are almost exactly similar in structure and style and layout. Certainly, the big commentaries and differences between the two is how fleshed out the setting is of the production. But that's like any other movie. The only big change that has really happened in this show has been the replacement of The Rumor with a song called Topsy Turvy. I knew Topsy Turvy. That was in the show I saw. I only recently had heard The Rumor. I think Topsy Turvy is a better song.
I saw The Rumor.
They both serve basically the same purpose.
I don't think either of them are in the film.
Really?
Yeah.
That makes sense. It's kind of a misplaced song in Act 2. Both of them kind of take a break from the line of the action, I think. Because by the time we're in Act 2, we don't care that much about Anatevka at large. We really just care about Tevye's family. And The Rumor...
Oh my god, I so disagree.
Really?
Yeah. But the ending, you don't care about Anatevka.
I care about Anatevka as a whole, as a symbolism of this thing. I don't care about the specifics of these rumors that everyone is spreading about where the married children have gone off to.
Oh, right. So that's like Anatevka politics.
You're not exactly. Buying into.
I don't care. You don't think, off you go.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Be refugee.
No, off you go.
Have fun.
I think Anatevka, the idea, is kind of what a lot of this musical is about. I think Anatevka, the conglomeration of people, is one that post Seitel's wedding, we don't care that much about.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the reason I've just done a little bit of mini research.
Yeah.
The reason that I asked about with Hava was the ending. So like the very, very end,
right,
when she comes back and just of that final, like, please give me your blessing.
Yeah.
And he still doesn't.
No.
Really? In a way, it's so ambiguous.
Right.
What happened? And I'm just going to completely spoil the end. Basically, what happens is Hava comes back. Basically, she has married a Russian. He's not Jewish.
Yeah, he's not. He's certainly not Tevye's choice at all. Anything he'd be okay with.
So he's a Christian boy, and this is obviously huge sacrilege, especially in that time. And I can almost sympathize.
Even just beyond being sacrilegious, like it's the enemy. We have seen these people cause awful, awful things to happen in this town
and history. Yeah, so that's who she chooses. Really smart choice there, Hava. And like you said earlier, Tevye doesn't give the blessing at all. He's given it to his other two daughters after a little bit of persuading. And so he basically says that she's dead to them as a family. She is no longer their daughter. She comes back right at the end just to see once more. I mean, to say goodbye and to see, can you give us her blessing? And he just ignores her. And it's her older sister, Seitel, who says goodbye. And then Tevye just kind of says under his breath, God be with you. It's like a prompt to say, like, Seitel will say, God be with you. But he doesn't say it to her.
Yeah.
So in my very roundabout, this 20-minute long argument, I don't think gets what she wants. Because I think what she wants is to be happily and, you know, blessedly married. She asks for Tevye's acceptance, and he doesn't ever really give that.
Right. It would come down to the semantics of whether or not God be with you counts as a blessing.
But because he doesn't say it to her.
Right. It is very cold. It's very much how you play it. It would come in the nonverbals. I bet you could play it either way.
Yeah. So that's why I think Tevye is the protagonist.
In the end, I do think Tevye is more the protagonist.
But I think talking about the placement of Matchmaker is a good point to make. If we swap Rich Man and Matchmaker around, what would that do?
So what is interesting about Rich Man is it is not... None of the things Tevye talks about are his daughters. He wants success for him and his wife in life. And it's really him complaining about not having had it, which makes it a really interesting I want song in the grand scheme of things. And then the rest of the show is not about Tevye becoming a rich man. It's about him attempting to set his children up to become financially successful or at least financially stable. It feels like a sideways backdoor I want song, because clearly it is setting up his motivation for these things. It wouldn't make any sense if he didn't sing this beforehand. But I think if we don't see the daughters first, then we don't get the sidewaysness of it. We don't get that this is not an I want song about what Tevye wants for himself. It is an I want song about what Tevye wants for his family.
So in a way, it is the perfect placement because they are his motivation. Mm-hmm. They are what he does everything in the movie. I'm calling it a movie. So I watched it last night. So it's so fresh in my head.
I think a lot more people know the movie. I also think the touring production that most people have seen has Topol in it. Like, it is the movie. I am... Sorry, internet. I am a Zero Mustel fan over Topol. I think Topol's great.
That's fine.
But I think Zero is fabulous.
He is fab, and by definition, he is just a fabulous man.
Did you enjoy the story goes, at least, did you enjoy the coloring of the movie? Like the whole color palette of the whole thing?
Yes.
It's kind of got this ragged, subtle sepia brown tone to it all.
Yeah, very, very slight sepia-ness.
The story goes that either the director said to someone or someone said to the director, pointing at a woman's nylons, like a woman's brown old nylons, that is the color I want this movie to be. And so the director went out, bought a pair of the nylons, and filmed the majority of the movie through the stretched out fabric of a brown nylon.
You're kidding me. Really?
Yeah. I'm not sure how true that is, but that is at least how the story goes. And apparently that is what contributes to a lot of that kind of very old-timey, brownish, orangish looking feel to the whole thing.
It feels so historical. It's great. But I think as well, even... And this is something, because I want to go away from just talking about the movie, because that's not what we are. But it's something that is a feature of the story, is that it starts in spring and then it ends in winter. And that's perfect, really, because it starts happy and life and hooray, and then ends in bleak.
Yeah, well, it embodies the change that we see throughout the show, which is awesome. And the sort of thing you can do with a movie musical adaptation. And a lot of the problems I end up having with a lot of musical to screen adaptations is the changes they make, or the ways they decide this clearly wouldn't work on screen. If you hold the script and the libretto right next to each other, they're almost exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
It really, really honors the story and just evokes the story in so many wonderful and exciting ways.
Which I think is testament to the writing of the original show. I think it's got one of the best books of a musical that exists.
And even what I find so interesting about... So Fiddler on the Roof, as much as it is about historical Judaism, it is also about historical Broadway in its kind of meta existence. And in every script you ever find, or any sort of paper items you receive about this, Jerome Robbins is credited in a box on the front of the things as saying original direction and choreography by Jerome Robbins. And it hasn't changed. The 2015 revival is marketed as based on the original direction and choreography.
But very interesting point about that. So the rights are up. Jerry is no more.
Really?
So they've got a new choreographer in.
Wow.
He is from Israel and basically grew up dancing, being taught traditional, you know, Israeli and dances. So in terms of his influence, there's probably no one better. And what I think Bart, the director, has asked him to do is to really make it as not naturalistic, but as real, as kind of as pure as possible, while still remaining very kind of raw and visual. And what I'm so excited about is Jerry Robbins is so prescriptive in his choreography. If you just look at his choreography manuals, they're ridiculous. It's great, but it's his lovely ego splashed on a page.
Yeah.
I could go on for hours about Jerry Robbins. You know, for like things like West Side Story, the choreography of that is much more well-known than the choreography of Fiddler. You think West Side Story, you think the choreography, and you can see every single move that they do. I'm so excited to see something new.
Exactly.
I trust this guy implicitly. I've had a look at some of his stuff, and I think I'll probably put some in the show notes. Mm-hmm. It's such an interesting style that he's got, and it is a very kind of contemporary style. I think it will be a nice little bit of new energy to bring to the show.
It'll be a nice refresher, because I do think, I think a lot of people see Fiddler on the Roof because they've seen Fiddler on the Roof. A lot of people go to the theater to watch it again, and then they want to see exactly the same thing they've done. But we're 60 years later. It's nice to have the opportunity for something different. Just based on the shows we've talked about, even on this podcast so far, nothing has gotten the play time that Fiddler on the Roof has gotten. You know, it is still the 16th longest playing Broadway production.
Yep.
It was the first to pass 3,000 performances. Like, it was a record breaker when it started, and then has been revived 4 times already on Broadway.
Mm.
So it's been performed a bazillion times. It's gone on so many tours. And so there are so many subtle things to talk about. And it is a show that in its revival does not get rewritten like a lot of other revivals do.
Yeah.
It's a show where when they revive it, you wonder if they reach into the closet where they keep all the old costumes and pull them out again. They're like, we're going to do Fiddler again. Rodgers and Hammerstein were almost the composers on this show, the composer lyricist. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's fantastic.
They approached the idea of translating the Tevye and His Daughters and Tevye the Dairyman stories into a musical. And it was almost a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical.
Wow.
Based on, I think the stories were adapted into a play first, and they were considering adapting that. But nope, never happened. Now we have this.
And I'm fine with that.
I think it's great.
Don't mess with the gem.
Don't mess with the gem. But everyone does. So as much as this is what I love about Fiddler on the Roof, as much as no one changes the core story of Fiddler on the Roof, everyone parodies Fiddler on the Roof.
I know.
And they are, I love them. Do you not?
I don't know. I'm such a purist.
Have you seen It's One of the Easter Bonnets?
Is it the Avenue Q?
The Avenue Jew one?
I'll give you that.
That is what I want my parody to be, because it is bigger than both things combined. You get some jokes if you understand one piece. You get some jokes if you understand the other piece. If you understand both of them, you get more than twice as many jokes. I love it so much.
I'll give you the Avenue Q one.
It's for listeners who don't know and are searching through the show notes for this thing. During the Easter Bonnet in like 2005, maybe, when Fiddler on the Roof and Avenue Q were both playing on Broadway, the casts of both got together and did a smash up of both of their musicals with Jewish puppets. And it's very funny. It's very funny. Laser Wolf gets married to the gay puppet.
Yeah. In a way, it was authentic to Avenue Q, so I can still keep my purist status. Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I wonder why it does get parodied so much.
Because it's Broadway legend. Fiddler on the Roof, for a long time, was Broadway. As excited as people are about Hamilton nowadays, I imagine the buzz was equally as livid about Fiddler on the Roof. Like, it smashed records. You know, it held its record for a decade as the longest running show before Grease came around, which is a little unfortunate. But another,
it's all right,
topic for another show.
Exactly. I was reading an interview with Jessica Hecht, who is playing Golda in the revival. And interestingly, I think this is her first Broadway musical. She was Tony nominee for A View from a Bridge, the Scarlett Johansson one. In my head, it shows that the director is taking, I guess, the acting side of the show really seriously. And I think that's something that is so crucial to Fiddler. It is almost Chekhovian. I mean, obviously it's not written by Chekhov, but it's kind of the historical accuracy, the weight of what they're dealing with. It's heavy, and it's not something you can do trivially. You need to do your research, and you really need to be a very good actor.
Absolutely.
But anyway, she was doing an interview with Danny Burstein. It was to a Japanese journalist. They were just kind of basically talking about the story of it and what it means to them and things like that. And the journalist started crying, and they were like, what's going on here? And she's basically saying that the story and what they lived in those days, the tradition and everything, it resonates so well with her, because it's like, that is quintessential Japanese family. And I thought, that's fascinating.
There's something I was reading about I think it was the film having a really, really large impact in Japan.
Yeah, Japan is huge. It's absolutely huge.
And like, really unexpectedly too. But it makes sense when you think about it a little more.
And I don't really know much about Japanese tradition, but I know a bit about Fiddler, so I can imagine.
You can extrapolate it. Exactly. Well, and that, if anything, demonstrates that this is appealing to people who don't come from this particular realm of tradition.
You can draw parallels as well, I'm sure, to Hindi tradition, and maybe less so almost with kind of Catholic tradition, I guess.
I mean, I think it just comes at different time periods. I can draw relations to this with my turn of the millennium family upbringing and traditions that my parents had that they were upset that I didn't have. I really and truly think it is very, very easy to insert all sorts of different contemporary
parallels,
exactly, yeah, into this show, which is why it is so appealing. And I think that is why it's important to never update it with those things. Because once you start expounding on it literally, then you don't have that separation to think about it from your life perspective. But if all of a sudden Fiddler on the Roof was a story of a contemporary non-religious man and his three daughters who he wanted to betroth to husbands, but they're all like, "Father, I'm a lesbian," and that's the difference they're making, like, I don't think would be as relatable because you don't have the distance. Mm-hmm. There's something wonderful about drawing this connection, saying like, see all this stuff happening in 1905? It's also happening in 2015.
It's almost like a parable.
It is absolutely a parable. I think the
parable of the milkman and his daughters. That's what it would be called.
that's what it is. It was called Tevye and His Daughters, or Tevye the Dairyman. I mean, I think there is something about the show that is 100% parabolic. That's not...
I know, that isn't the right one, because that means something different.
Well, it's the word we're going to use. Parabolic.
Parabolicious. Can we go for parabolicious?
It's a parabolicious story. But, like, that feels like oral tradition. And it is oral tradition in so many ways, on so many meta levels. Like, not only is it Jewish oral tradition, it is Broadway oral tradition. It is now kind of an American oral tradition. It is a British oral tradition. It's wonderful that this really, really old story has survived in such a fleshed out and culturally significant way.
That was beautifully put. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. It makes up for the poop joke I made earlier.
Exactly. You're forgiven.
The productions we've both have seen have been done by schools.
But why? So yeah, why is it? Why is that?
I think some of the simpler things that make a show popular with schools are name recognition, because you want the kids and the parents to be excited about it, and nothing has more name recognition than Fiddler on the Roof. Maybe not nothing, but it's up there with Grease and like old stalwarts of musical theater. Even if you don't know musicals, you've heard of Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
That does a lot of your job for you. You don't have to explain what the show is to all of your kids. I think the other thing that makes this really popular with schools is that there are a lot of female leads. And for a long, long time, this was one of the shows with a lot of female leads.
That's so true. Yeah.
We're getting a lot better with that now in the world of musical theater. But the world of musical theater, in a lot of ways, has been a subtly chauvinistic kind of writing setting, as I imagine a lot of literature in contemporary society has been. But that is difficult from an educator perspective, because girls show up to audition. It's just a way that theater has panned out, at least in America, and I imagine in other places too.
When it comes to choosing shows and you're looking at the kind of cast demographics, so much is cut off to you because you're like, well, that's just not fair. At the end of the day, that is inappropriate because it's got one female lead.
You don't want to set yourself up for failure. You're also, ostensibly as an educator, you're trying to do your best to serve your student population. And so you do yourself no favors if you don't pick a show that you can cast people in.
And it can be so difficult to find that many good males. Don't know about you guys over there, but musical theater doesn't cry out manly men coming.
Which I want to change, Jimmy. It's the worst thing in the world.
Of course you do. I know. It is really, really bad.
If you are suddenly a only mildly interested straight man who has only been vaguely considering auditioning for a musical and you've stumbled upon this podcast, go audition for a musical right now.
This is your calling. This is the thing that you've been pondering over.
Tell them Jim and Tommy sent
you. Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps bringing it back a little bit, it is interesting to me that so many high schools do Fiddler because there are girls, because I think this show says interesting things about being a teenage girl. A lot of it is about empowering teenage girls. I think there's something very much that every teen girl can relate to in this. It's the same as, oh, mom won't give me the keys to the car to go out on Sunday night. Oh, my milkmaker dad is upset that I don't want to marry Laser Wolf.
And what I love as well is that between the three daughters, there's different degrees of that. So if you're like kind of rebellious, you're like, I'm a Zytel. But if you're way out there, you know what I mean, getting tattooed to your forehead and stuff, you are full on Hava.
This is your BuzzFeed, which of Tevye's daughters are you?
Yeah, exactly. We should make that. BuzzFeed, if you're listening.
God forbid you end up being one of the other two. What are their names?
Oh God, I don't think they have names. I actually don't. I don't think they've got names. I'm going to check that, but I'm pretty sure they're just the other two.
The other two. That's probably it. The other two.
Oh, yeah, they do. It's Sprinza and Bielka.
Sprinza sounds like a drink I'd order.
Uh-huh. And Bielka sounds like what you do after you've had too many of them.
Tevye's Dream is one of my favorite musical theater production numbers in existence.
What is it? It's so good.
It's wonderful. I think because it has the story so well interwoven into it, it has jokes written into the music, like the cymbal crash punctuating each thing. When I saw it, and I don't know if this is standard at all, but, you know, it's a blessing on your house, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov, and the cymbals go off, and it's always really loud, and Tevye does this, like, oh, you know, it gets, like, scared each time, and it happens three times. The third time it happened, Tevye grabbed the pillow off of his bed and held it between the cymbals, and the cymbals didn't crash, and it brought the house down. It was the funniest thing in the world. It's a wonderful combination of funny and scary.
Yeah.
And I think funny and scary work so well together, and we don't see them so successfully combined.
It must be so fun to just want to write that and just be like, I've got a fun idea.
It's fun because it makes you feel like a smart audience member because you're the only one who's in on it.
Uh-huh.
Tevye is lying. And the whole thing is a big lie, and you get to see, you know, you are a step ahead of the characters. You get to watch him, like, try and make it up as he goes along. It's just wonderful. And then Frumacera comes in.
Frumacera.
Do yourself a favor, never type into Google Frumacera High School Productions, because there are some not so great ones.
One of my best friends played Frumacera. What is a theater role?
It's wonderful.
It must be up there with a lot of people's desires.
I always wonder this because it's an interesting choice. Did they do the on the shoulders or did they fly her?
Neither.
What'd they do?
She came out of the bed.
Oh,
yeah.
That's wonderful. See, there's so many options there. My favorite Frumacera, which is a weird thing to have. Most people have, like, favorite Glindas. I have a favorite Frumacera.
Well, yes.
My favorite Frumacera was on the most recent Tuple Tour, and his name is Sean Patrick Doyle.
Right, okay.
He's a contratenor, beautiful, lovely high voice, and does the whole thing, and it's like, and if you marry Laser Wolf, you will be da-da-da! It's wonderful.
Oh, well done. Okay, yeah.
I'll put it in the show notes. There's a great video of him performing, and he is stunning and beyond fabulous, and a wonderfully interesting choice. A very interestingly progressive choice for a musical seeped in religious tradition to do Frumacera in drag.
Yeah. Well, that's a discussion that we're going to need to have probably in another podcast, because it's huge at the moment, the whole men take away female roles. And, like, do you know what? It links right back to what we were literally just discussing about there not being female roles,
mm-hmm.
and then the men are taking them. In London at the moment, we've got a production of Importance of Being Earnest. David Suchet is playing Lady Bracknell, and the world is up in arms because how dare he?
I will be interested to hear what you have to say about this more, because that is, while it may be a super contemporary trend, for a long time, that was just the mode. That was all of Shakespeare's time. Men played women all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was hilarious. It's written into the plays that it's funny jokes.
Yeah.
And it is only in the past century and a half where women have been on stage, which is great. Like, absolutely, we shouldn't go back. But it is an interesting thing. You know, it's one of those things where people be like, oh, this new change that is happening. Like, no, we're regressing. We're not deciding something new.
Yeah, you can imagine my thoughts.
I'm sure.
I am not a fan.
Nevertheless, Sean Patrick Doyle as Frumacera is wonderful.
Honestly, just go, if you've never seen Fiddler, just watch Tevye's Dream first. And then make an estimation in your head as to what the show's going to be like. Can you imagine? You're like, this is great. This is like a Steve Martin comedy or something.
Like, that's like telling someone, so you know nothing about Oklahoma, go watch the Dream Ballet first.
Exactly. But that's, do you know what? That's what I love about Tevye's Dream, is it's just kind of, it is laughing in the face of these RNH dream sequences, and that's good, because that is moving away from it, and that's saying the Dream Ballet. I'm sure, did we talk about this recently? Was it me and you that were talking about this?
I made a Twitter post about Dream Ballets recently. There was one in Bye Bye Birdie that I had never heard about before.
Was it that? I feel like I've spoken to someone in the world.
Maybe,
about
it
Dream
might
Ballet
have been
recently.
Us. I have a morbid fascination with the existence and then subsequent cutting of Dream Ballets,
yes,
in musical theater.
I think it was you. But in a way, that is kind of the world being like, okay, great. This is what we should really be doing now, because people have had it.
It's wonderful, because that's the problem with Dream Ballets. Dream Ballets existed in Oklahoma because people weren't ready to put all their eggs in the musical theater basket. They were like, we need a little bit of real art to put in this thing in case the rest of it fails. So what's real art? How about some ballet? And it's like this non-trustworthy thing,
yeah,
of not believing in your own art.
I think it's funny that J.R. Robbins goes from West Side Story, the Somewhere Ballet, into Tevye's Dream.
There's the Somewhere Ballet in West Side Story. There's the Dream Ballet in Oklahoma. There's the How to Kill a Man Ballet in Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh God, there's so many.
There's an awful drunken ballet in The Pajama Game that gets cut.
I've been in a production of The Pajama Game before.
Me too!
Who did you play?
I was Heinze.
I had no role.
Oh.
I'm not bitter.
Who were you going for? If you could go back, who would you want to be?
Oh, of course, Heinze.
It's a wonderful role.
Why wouldn't you? I had one line. I was man.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna tell this story.
I'm excited. We're gonna put it in. People, the internet is gonna know. Jimmy is
okay.
Bitter.
Did you hear the cracking of my knuckles in there?
I did. Yeah. If I didn't, I'll put in some really gross,
some
like
knuckle
extra
crack
sound effects.
Yeah.
Like knuckle cracking.
So this was my first year of university. I had just come off the back of being in high school and, you know, doing quite well in shows there. So I was like, right, let's go for musical theatre here. And they were doing The Pajama Game and I had no idea what it was. I was like, right, okay, so I did my research. I was like, okay, I want this role. I'm going to go for it. So I learned all the songs. For some reason, I decided to audition with Being Alive from Company. I'm a bass, by the way, just to put that one out there.
Uh-huh.
So I dropped the key about 90 semitones, but that's fine. But basically, picture this to fit in a reference, right? This was on the back of my emo phase, my little emo rebellion phase.
Naturally.
So I'm going to put in a show note. I'm not even going to show you this until the show notes are up. A picture of me in my emo days.
Oh, I'm so excited. We'll have to vote. I'll put in a picture of me as Heinze, both to rub it in your face.
Yep.
And so the audience members can compare which is more embarrassing.
Okay. I'm going to win. So there was emo auditioning for The Pajama Game. And it was one of those things, like the college didn't match the cuffs necessarily in terms of my personality and what I looked like. But that's just me. I'm an enigma. And, you know, got cast in the course, which was fine. You know, it was first year, and it was my first year, so I didn't expect anything, but I was very happy to be there. The guy that played Heinze was great. So good. So that's fine. I wasn't bitter. The bitterness grew as the rehearsals progressed.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we'd be kind of going into rehearse a scene and there'd be assorted ensemble roles and everyone get picked, you know, and here's little emo me just kind of sitting there on the sideline.
Mwah.
Getting nothing.
Aww.
Okay, nothing. It got to us rehearsing,
uh-huh,
one of the last scenes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you know the precursor scene to 7.5 cents?
Yes.
So do you remember that scene well, the precursor scene, because it's so vital to the whole show. The one role in that scene, which is so vital, is the role of man.
Uh-huh.
Workman, I think it's called, specifically. There was our director all geared up, ready to give it to someone else. And Jimmy the Diva started to grow. And I was like, no, sorry, just to say. Just to say, I'm the only person in the whole show that doesn't have a solo line. I know that's awful, but that's unfair.
And then the director said, good, get out.
He's like, anyway. So he thankfully let me say this line, okay? Uh-huh. Now, obviously, it's of so much importance.
It's a vital, vital line. I remember it well.
I'm so well.
I'm excited to hear your delivery of it because you can tell that I'm building up
to this amazing delivery of this line, okay? And it really, it changed the whole show.
Right, without it.
So I can understand his deliberation is you know, why to give me that responsibility.
It's a pivotal line. You don't want to throw that away.
On I come onto the stage and I say, this'll wake them up.
You're right. That's
rupturous applause.
That's an important line.
People were crying. It was that weird. It was weird because it was very traditional, like roses being tossed onto the stage. And I was like, guys, it's not opera. Please, please be seated.
You had to like wave your hands down at them. Like, no, that's enough. Stop.
I did a sort of a Patti LuPone style bow mid performance.
Men were crying. Women had their babies on the spot.
Literally, so many births, and a lot of people then named their children after me. But that's understandable. I'm totally fine with that.
Makes a lot of sense, yeah.
So that was that. Still not better. It's been what? 7 years? I'm fine. I'm totally fine.
Well, Jimmy, we will do our own production of the Pajama Game.
Do you want to know a story of hope?
Absolutely.
I went on to become the president of that society.
And it was your motto, this'll wake them up?
Yes. It should have been my campaign speech. No, I cut my hair. That's what it was. The moral of the story, you can't be emo on a stage.
That's a beautiful, stunning story.
And it completely ties back to Fiddler.
Uh-huh.
Because Tevye wakes up from the dream.
From his dream. I see what you did there. That was stunning.
Thank you. You know, we've been talking a lot about Hamilton because we like that show.
Because that's really the actual name of our podcast. Hamilton, the musical, the podcast.
It's Hamilton's influence on history. Because it's there. No, one of the things that I love about Lin-Manuel was one of the first things I kind of found out about him was obviously he's a big musical theater geek, and one of his big roles, if not his first role, was Tevye.
Really?
Yeah. And he uses that as kind of a proponent speech to say, this is why amateur theater is so great, because in what world could Lin-Manuel ever play Tevye?
Exactly.
You know, a Puerto Rican boy playing a old Jewish man.
No, that's exactly why amateur and educational theater is so wonderful. Because, like, you get to play against your type, you get to play against your age, you get to play against your gender, and it's all just fine. It's part of the game.
And that, because I had to kind of use that a lot as evidence for when people were saying, why are you doing In the Heights in Scotland? Why are you doing that? And I was like, well, because we can and no one else has done it yet. So it's a good show. Let's go watch it.
Exactly the same reason to do Fiddler on the Roof at a Catholic school.
That if you think about Heights, and maybe Hamilton in a little way, but the character of Usnavi kind of relates in a big way to Tevye.
Even just in structure.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like the opening in the Heights.
And Fiddler on the Roof both begin with the narrator protagonist coming out and going, welcome to this town. Here are the things you have to know.
Exactly. Here's these people.
Right. Here's the hair salon. Here's the blacksmith. Like,
this is what we believe in and this is what we're fighting for. And then
this is the musical about our town. And then at the end of it, it's like, here's how our town has changed. And it's sad and it's hopeful. That's really interesting. In the Heights and Fiddler on the Roof.
Fiddler on the Roof.
They both have a preposition and the in their title.
Oh my gosh. What does it mean?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
Can I tell you something I wrote on our show notes and then my friends laughed at me about it and then I fixed it?
Uh-huh.
So I was just doing like a brain dump on, you know, things I wanted to talk about at Fiddler on the Roof, and I wrote on the notes, Fergie. And I was talking with my friends about Fiddler on the Roof and the things we're going to talk about. And I said, and then we're going to talk about Fergie. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I said, you know Fergie. She sings that song from Fiddler on the Roof. And they're like, Gwen Stefani?
Gwen Stefani, yeah.
I was like, oh, Gwen Stefani, not Fergie.
No, very different people.
But Gwen Stefani sings If I Were a Rich Girl.
Na 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 na. Yep.
Which I'm just always disappointed that she doesn't do the armpit dance.
I hope she has done it at some point. Do you know what I mean? I'd love that.
Everyone's done the armpit dance at some point in their life.
Exactly. If she like toured out to like Israel or something, if she just like brought out as a token there. Do you know what? That was my first experience of Fiddler.
Really?
Yeah. Was that song. In fact, yeah, let's talk about, I've not really talked about the songs. Let's talk about the songs.
Yeah.
Let's get some structure in this darn thing.
Absolutely. So what I love about Fiddler on the Roof, there are songs you remember and songs you don't remember. Like a lot of other musicals. Like,
yeah,
I only know Miracle of Miracles because I learned it as an audition song once. But I don't think anyone, and even right now, I don't know if I could recall the words to Miracle of Miracles other than Wonder of Wonder Miracles.
Wonder of Wonder Miracles, miracles. Yeah.
Something once again. Exactly.
Yeah.
But conversely, I can hear the bottle dance in my head, and there aren't even words to that.
Yeah, very true. Did you, when you weren't in it, no, you've seen it?
No, I've seen it.
Did they proper bottle dance, or did they stick a little bottle in a hat?
So this is something I think has been true 100% of the time. I think every bottle dance anyone has ever seen involved Velcro in some way.
In some way, yeah.
I think just some people are better at hiding it.
Interesting.
Because it's devastating if a bottle falls off in the middle of the bottle dance.
I know.
It would be like that awful YouTube video where they pull on Wendy's flying cord instead of Peter's flying cord. Like, it just ruins the whole show. Oh, have you not seen that one? It's awful. I always feel bad laughing at it.
Okay, that'll be in the show notes because I'm intrigued.
Yeah, no, you should watch it in the show notes. It is community theater to the core.
Oh, no.
There's like a baby crying in the background.
Oh, great.
It's the very end and they mean to pull Peter Pan's flying cord, but instead Wendy, who is asleep in the bed, they yank on it and she goes flying out of the bed and is like, ah! That's the funniest thing in the world.
I'm excited. I'm going to listen to your point and think about it for a second. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I'm me, but I remember a lot of the songs.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So maybe I'm there's wrong. That.
From Act 1, yeah, pretty much them all.
Huh. Maybe, yeah.
But then okay. Act 2, less so. But then there's not really many.
Well, I also think that is a part of the musical theater experience. It's the beginning of Act 2 struggle. Like, how do you get out of the cliffhanger without ending the musical right now?
Yeah.
A lot of Act 2 is kind of filler. Always.
But then you've got... No, I'm disagreeing with myself.
You know, Do You Love Me is right there.
Do You Love Me?
It's a beautiful song. A lot of duet songs they start and end at the same point in like the tactics and the escalation, or they're built on counterpoint or like direct competition.
Mm-hmm.
Do You Love Me is more complex and nuanced than that.
Mm.
And it is wonderful to watch and feel Tevye come to this realization of like he's never thought of this or asked this question before, and how he tries to communicate that to Golda through all the things she responds with. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
It's about so much more than love. I mean, it's about a very, very particular kind of love and way of showing that is so tied up in the rest of the changing culture of this world they're in. It is Tevye's revelation song.
Mm-hmm.
He's never thought with all of his daughters about whether or not they love their betrothed or not betrothed. And for him to finally come to that realization of, oh my God, what was this like for me? What is this like for my wife? We're so far, you know, the ship has sailed so much and I've never thought about this.
It's just lovely, isn't it?
That's what they're. This musical is a musical of beautiful, beautiful songs, like very delicately beautiful songs.
The most delicate and beautiful, I would argue, is Havala, because that destroys me. That is proper moving musical theater.
Do you think, because we talked about this, I think the most successful songs in musical theater are songs that spit out the character in a different spot from where they started.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Tevye changes by the end of Havala?
What I think Havala is it's like it's as if she has died. It's as if he's singing about the daughter that he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And the little dance montage as well. It's literally as if he's like, I remember that girl. It's just so, it's so beautiful. And it's so just downplayed. There's no big moment in, for, obviously, for Tevye, who's very, you know, rousing, to have this beautiful little tiny solemn ballad. Oh, it's just destructive. And the choreography is beautiful as well. I don't know what it is about it. It sticks out in my mind.
And it goes against form. I mean, that is the part in Act Two where we're in, you know, we're building, 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 and then about to resolve. But to go so far down and so demure and
yeah,
so like such a private song is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it is neat that clearly it's successful. I guess I can't get over the fact that Tevye doesn't change his mind.
Do you hate that?
As a person, I don't like that.
Uh-huh.
As an appreciator of art, I think that's what makes it very successful.
It's so bitter, because I think that's it. And that's why I like the idea of Tevye being your typical protagonist and don't even question it, because it affects you as an audience member. It makes you stop and, you know, you're all along, you're siding him, you're siding with him, you're siding with him. You're laughing with him and he's the best guy. Look at this lovely man. And he makes this decision and you're kind of on that ride, and it's as if you're just like sitting with him and you're like, it's awkward now. Yeah, you know, I'm still gonna listen to you, and but it's awkward. And I love stuff like that. I think it's like meaty, because you're like, it's so challenging for you as an audience member. I love really hitting an audience member over the head. That's challenging writing.
It leaves you thinking. It makes the piece important more than just a fluffy, you know, night out at the theater.
Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be people out there who will 100% side with Tevye and be like, nope, to be honest with you, that's a betrayal. I'm not a father, so I can't fathom what that would be like. It's so challenging the more I think about it. Like, I'm trying to relate it to something that I could empathize with.
But that's what's so wonderful about its parabolic nature.
Yeah, yeah. No, parabolicious.
Parabolicious,
is the word.
Pardon me. Parabolicious nature is that you, while you may not agree with Tevye, you understand.
Yeah.
You've been set up completely to understand why this is the line too far.
Uh-huh.
Which is what makes it wonderful. And what makes it interesting that it is presented, because we traditionally associate parables with, like, and the moral of the story is, but what is the moral of Fiddler Around the Roof?
I know, be progressive, but not that progressive.
Right, exactly. Or is the moral, like, things change and we deal? Probably, because it's called Fiddler Around the Roof.
You'll always be balancing.
The metaphor of the whole thing.
Now let's get metaphorical, let's get deep. One of the things, when I was watching it last night, I was just thinking, so obviously at the start, it talks about the fiddle on the roof. What's the thing that keeps you up there? Tradition.
Yeah.
And I mean, I might just be literally just stating the point of the show here, but obviously as he goes through the show, he takes away from tradition. What happens, but Anna Tevye gets ruined when they all start, you know, I mean, it's chalk and cheese break beside each other. They all start mixing and dancing because Perchik's progressive. And then suddenly the whole village is destroyed.
I think it is important. I think the fiddler on the roof metaphor is larger than what Tevye makes it out to be. While he says what keeps the fiddler on the roof is tradition,
uh-huh.
I think he's wrong.
Okay.
I think in his mind at the beginning of the show, he's right. But there's a reason the show doesn't end with a reprise of tradition, you know?
Uh-huh.
There is something so elegant about the metaphor of a fiddler on the roof. The idea of playing a song on a fiddle evokes this, like, maintaining of tradition. We have this beautiful thing that we want to keep up. We want to give this music to the world and have it loft through the air. And it's really important, and that's why we're on top of a roof. We're not just standing in the town square. But with being on the roof comes the unsteadiness of the world we're standing on.
Yeah.
Like, that can move at any moment. And how do we continue to keep our balance up here while still focusing on the music? How do we make sure we can continue to play this music? I mean, there are all sorts of evocative images in our world. They've pervaded through art, and everyone thinks, you know, this musical is based on various paintings, which there are varying accounts about, but of people, specifically violins, playing them in worlds of destruction and worlds of war, and like, mm-hmm. but we still have the music, even in this unsettling world. And that is what why I think it is a stronger metaphor than what Tevye makes it out to be.
Yep.
It is about how do we adapt ourselves to maintain something that we can call tradition.
Yeah.
How do we keep our balance on this roof and still continue to play something we're okay with as music? I think it is, and I would want to go back and listen to it, but it is important mm-hmm. in the musical where string music comes in, where string music is like that. It is
interesting.
It is
a very
overt metaphor used throughout the thing.
I think one of the biggest ones, because the fiddler is featured at various points, you know, as like spotlight on fiddler. One of the biggest ones is in Havala, and that's, to me, that's really big. He's dancing away with Havala. What does that mean?
Yeah, like, you can do some wonderful things.
The formula kind of goes, Tevye does something against tradition, bad things happens, and then Chava happens where he sticks on it, and then bad things still happen. You know what I mean? Is that a bigger thing where it's saying, look, it's not the kind of thing you can control? Which is a big religious argument there, like...
Or is it the sort of thing we're saying, like, bad things happen no matter what?
Yeah.
And it is up to you to find the steady ground in your life mm-hmm. to keep you grounded, to find the tradition in the world you want to live in.
But that's... But Tevye... When he makes that decision, he says, no, this is too far. It's too much for me to deal with. No, Hava. So that's him finding his ground in a way. But yet, he doesn't get any plaudits from it. It's not, like, good.
It destroys him. Like, it is not a happy decision by any means.
It's a bad thing for everyone. And then Anatevka still is ruined. I'm in a Tevye-style struggle right there myself. Because I can't work out what that is. I can't work out why. And I think that's it's the kind of thing I would need to kind of sit and muse on a little bit more.
So this is why me as a person struggles with this, but me as an appreciator of art loves it, because it makes you think and question, why did Tevye make this decision to stick to tradition at this point?
Exactly.
There is no... We're in a world of religion. We're in a world of belief. There is no explicit verbose justification.
Yeah.
The answer is because God, because deity, because this is how it is, because tradition.
And it, I guess it is that quite... But he doesn't... Maybe is that something I would want? Or do I like that's not there? Like, that he doesn't ever say... He never says, like, why have you forsaken me? He never says that at the end when Anatevka goes...
I would argue that Tevye is cast in a different religious light from the beginning, because the point of If I Were a Rich Man is... Why have you forsaken me from the very beginning in the most minor of ways? But also, it's like a, why have you forsaken me? Oh no, I understand. It would be better if you hadn't, but I understand.
But I think that's fine, because that's religion. You know, everyone who is religious, I'm not religious, but I appreciate it, and I really am fascinated by it. People with really strong religious beliefs, and they, you know what I mean, they go through that struggle of, why is this happening? I understand. I'm going to stay strong in my faith.
I think it is a musical 100% about that. You know, substitute tradition in for religion. They're all the same. They're different words for the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they all come from the same place. Pre-existing just because standards, traditions. And cast in this wonderful dichotic gray area light. That, like, you know, what is it from the very beginning? Like, we are a town where everyone gets along, you know, where one time he sold him a horse, but it ended up being a mule. But we've all gotten over that. And they haven't gotten over that. And they immediately argue about it. And it 100% embodies all of these traditions and these sayings and these morals that they have about their life. Like, we say it is this way and it is always this way, except when it isn't.
Well, that's, I think that's the rabbi, and we always get, like, rabbi, have you got a blessing for this? And rabbi, what should we do? You know, I mean, and they always kind of do look to the rabbi for that counsel, which sometimes isn't always there. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm going through a little existential crisis as I think about all of this, and I'm just trying to work it out.
It's great. I think that's one of the powers of this musical, is you can watch it and not end up in this existential world, but the moment you open that door in your mind, it's big. And then the wonderful thing about it is, you know, as we've said, neither of us are Jewish, but so much of this is couched in the Jewish faith. It is a religion of rules and tradition and standard. There is no negotiating with the rules that have slowly been adapted and changed throughout the years.
Yeah.
And those don't work. They don't mesh together, but in reality exist together.
Yeah.
As embodied through this musical set in a land far, far away. It's wonderful. It is the success of this show.
And I think that's the thing, you don't have to be religious to get it.
Yeah.
At all, because everyone goes through that turmoil of, like, you know, everyone has a sense of right and wrong, which is the majority of people. What is right and wrong, and why am I being right? What's the value?
I think that is why it is wonderful that this is set up as a parable. If you pulled out the fourth wall breaking Tevye in this, which they didn't in the movie, which is a very easy decision to make for movies sometimes, it doesn't have the same impact. If it is just a look into this window of this old time long past, then people who aren't Jewish, people who aren't religious, people who don't have these sort of things can't find the something to relate to. It's just this kind of observational exercise of look at this old place. But once it becomes a parable, once it becomes a observe our little town, here are the rules we have, then that invites you as an audience member to put in your, you know, tradition becomes your Mad Libs. Like, what is your fill in the blank here? It allows you to recast all of these things in your light, while also at the same time observing them in the light of the characters of the show. It's a wonderful stew of all these feelings.
Honestly, the more that we've talked about it, the more I'm like, it's my favorite show. But it's really good. And honestly, if anyone listens to our podcast who isn't an advocate of musical theatre, which I don't think will happen, you just have to show them something like this, right?
Yeah.
And you just have to say, look, there's songs, okay, that's fine, but it's so thought-provoking.
That is even the buy-in of Fiddler on the Roof, and I think this contributes to excess even more so. It is the whole, the discussion of diegetic and non-diegetic music. Fiddler on the Roof dances a really fine line, and it's wonderful. Because it's called Fiddler on the Roof, because from the very beginning, Tevye's like, it's like a fiddler on the roof. He's over there. See him? He exists in real life. He's that guy playing the fiddle on the roof. But the Fiddler on the Roof is a metaphor from the very beginning, and is an overt metaphor, and you know about it, and so you have this wonderful fine line of, like, are we singing and dancing because it's a wedding, or are we singing and dancing because it's a musical?
Yeah.
Are we listening to this real legitimate guy who plays the violin standing on a shack?
Uh-huh.
Or is it the string music playing in Tevye's mind that represents the tradition that is ever present in his life? And the answer is it's both.
Yeah.
But that is the buy-in of this musical. It is a musical from the very beginning. Fiddler on the Roof, titled Fiddler on the Roof, doesn't work as a non-musical. You can't do Fiddler on the Roof without music. And it's great.
Because of the atrocities that are going on at the moment in Syria, the world is looking at these refugees. Everyone is kind of going through a struggle of, oh, what can I do? Fiddler is effectively it ends up being a story about refugees. It's the backstory.
It's the backstory of refugees. It is contemporary today. And that is the genius and the thoughtfulness of the whole thing, that it is written and created in such a way that is still explicitly relevant today.
I know, which is a tragedy almost, that's the thing that a lot of people are going to take from it is, oh gosh, that's how these people are. Because, you know, there's so much at the moment where people are just kind of forgetting that these refugees are people, like, and they've just lived a life for their whole lives.
They've had their tradition, they've had all of these things they've gone through here.
Exactly, and now that world has just been rocked. At the end of the show, that's what you're left with. You're like, where are you going? Like, what the hell are you going to do?
Yeah, what happens next?
That's what all of these poor people are thinking, and in a way, that's why it's going to be so relevant at the moment. But you're right, it's sad that that's the thing, that this is the 1900s. Why are we still having a similar problem in 2015?
I agree that it is sad. I think that is the... It is wonderful that Fiddler on the Roof exists as a kind of documentation of this. Without it, it is a memory lost to time. It would seem like Syrian refugees then suddenly are this new thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But because we have the existence of a piece of popular culture that very clearly documents this happening and points out all the subtle problems with it back in the 60s, back in the turn of the last century, and then we can draw parallels to it today. Like, that is the purpose of art to a T. Like, that's chapter one art study. Document history so we don't forget. And can remember the not just the explicit historical facts of it, but the subtle human emotional facts of it. And then to create a vehicle to cope and deal with and create discussion and, you know, hopefully move towards some, not solution is always the wrong word, but some sort of,
I know,
plan or,
yeah,
like just discussion itself is helpful. And that's what art does.
I know that it almost sounds a little bit trivial to say that, oh, a musical is going to, you know, change people's thinking, but no, I'm sorry, it will.
Stranger things have happened, and the worst choice is always inactivity.
And I don't think that's the reason why they've decided to helm this, but I don't think they said, look, there's a crisis, let's put this on. It's just a weird happenstance.
But there's always subtleties in why certain musicals come to the forefront of human consciousness at a certain time. There's a reason they revived Hair however many couple years ago.
Yeah.
There's a reason these sort of things happen. And whether they're explicit in the forefront of the producers and the directors' minds doesn't matter as much. There's something in the zeitgeist. There's something in the air or in the water that is making these themes relevant again.
Yeah.
I like to think, at least, that it's not just people like, oh, people will come see Fiddler and that'll make us a lot of money.
And that's the thing, is it is, it's one of these shows that it's got a lot of reverence. There's a few out there.
When it's, to me, it is a really interesting thing, because I think, as you could even glean just by listening to our conversation, artistic types, theatrical types, musical theater types are not the most reverent, are not the most religious, are not the most God-fearing.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of baggage about that and reasons for that that are, you know, worth a whole thesis in art history.
Uh-huh.
But the people who perform Saturday night shows aren't the people going to Sunday morning church.
Yeah.
And it is interesting to me that, nevertheless, Fiddler on the Roof, a musical explicitly about reverence and religion, is such a popular title in the world of theater.
Yep. No, I think I think compared to the last two, obviously Sweeney's fantastic, Ham's fantastic. We chose to do Fiddler because we didn't know it as well.
Yeah, this might be a surprise to some of the listeners, but this podcast was a risk. And who knows, maybe it didn't turn out well.
I know, maybe people might.
Maybe this hasn't made any sense at all. We'll find out in the edit. But Jimmy and I did go into this trying to pick a musical that, I, at least from my perspective, I felt I should know more about.
Yeah, should know more about. It's not one that I've yet to obsess over Fiddler, but I'm ready to now. I feel I have. Do you know? I feel over the course of this hour.
That is why I never want to be a critic and always want to be a fan of musical theater.
Yeah.
Because even the worst, most awful, hated pieces of musical theater, if I sat down and listened to it and thought about it, I could probably find a podcast's worth of things to talk about.
Exactly. Which is why next week we're going to be talking about Carrie. That's not true. That's not true.
Jimmy.
Hey, Tommy.
We thought it would be fun. I'm telling you this like you don't know, but we thought
I don't know anything.
This would be fun to.
I just woke up. What are we talking about today?
We thought it would be fun to give our listeners a tease about what musical we're going to talk about next time on the podcast.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Wouldn't that be fun? So I have this kind of quiz question here that if you know the answer to this, you will be able to figure out what show we're going to talk about next week. Does that sound like
fun? Next week. That's good. And it also means that we're prepared.
It also means that we are more prepared than we have ever been.
We're evolving. Yeah. What's the question?
You ready? You ready for this? All right.
I'm born ready.
About our next podcast, a Supreme Court justice described the source material for this musical as prurient. What musical?
What word was that?
That's prurient. It's P-R-U-R-I-E-N-T. The Supreme Court justice described the source material for this musical as prurient. What musical? Yep. We'll talk about it next week.
Next week. Very exciting.
It's going to be great.
As usual, please tell us how we did.
There'll be a link to the Reddit post where you can comment stuff. Come on over. Have a blast.
I promise I'm going to get really existential this time around. There'll be like pages upon pages of me musing about life. That's a guarantee.
Jimmy's going to come back in a couple weeks and have completely converted religions and just be entirely a different person.
I have an alarm going somewhere. I'm going to go find out what that's about.
I assume this is not an alarm, Jimmy. I assume there's just people playing music in your apartment.
Oh, sugar. Can you hear it?
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can. Isn't it pretty?
It is pretty.
I'm so tangled up. What is it? Oh, it's coming from my phone, which is right here.
I think it would be more fun if there was just a man with a xylophone standing behind you. He's like, what, you want me to stop?
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.